One nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, I need a motion to approve the minutes from the March meeting.
Hello.
Second.
Any questions, comments, modifications? Not all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries. No grievances. We'll start out with Scott.
Morning.
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 Perfect. So this morning, what I'd like to do is ask permission to add the Atlanta North Cohocton Fire District to our county plan effective July 1. We've been working with them for the last year on and off. We had brought in the Cohocton Fire District, Town of Cohocton, the Village of Cohocton, obviously in our plan. North Cohocton has asked, we're about 45% cheaper than where they're paying right now. So it's a great savings for them, and it'll be nice to get that department in that kind of rounds out the Cohocton area for membership. So any questions?
They have no problems on the...
No, they've actually got no losses, no claims. So they're a small department. So, you know, like everybody, we try to help that, you know, we try to help them out, keep the premiums
great
down. Plus, you know, with the cancer benefit as an added benefit for them, it's a real help for them.
Yeah. Thank you. So moved.
Second.
Second. Any more questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries. Thanks.
Great.
If I could, just a quick update, just to let you know, I mean, we talk about the health of our workers' comp plan, but yesterday Scott passed along, PERMA does on our behalf, they have an actuary do a long-term liability study. They're very conservative. I'm very familiar with this actuary firm. They're good, but they tend on the very conservative side. They actually dropped our liability estimates by over $1 million.
Yeah.
So our liabilities are fully funded. So our fund balance is in really good shape for that plan, where if you recall, we were a few million dollars under in terms of reserves for our comp plan about 10 years ago when we made the transition to this high deductible. So it's kudos to Scott, kudos to PERMA. You guys are doing great with it.
Thanks. Yeah, it's a great deal. Great deal. It really is. If you like copies, I'd be more than happy to forward it off to you folks if you like. So. Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Scott.
Andy.
Good morning.
Morning.
Is it the one item looking to get authorization to overcome surplus option? Got mostly equipment at this point. RTI has a large municipal auction in May. If we could get on that, it would come. If it's for us to be on that auction. There are, let's see here, I think we have six vehicles for the sheriff's office, patrol vehicles, I assume, mostly. Public health has a van right now. But we've got 5 10-wheeler trucks, which are kind of important we get rid of those quick because the things rust up. You know, have problems with the ins and outs when they sit around very long. So these are just coming out of service now. So we have them in May. The trucks, I think, will be good shape. And Jerry said he had one front end go loaded. So that would be the majority of the stuff. They have options every month. But I think timing-wise, it'd be good to have this option next month.
And we've used this company, the auction company, in the past?
Yes, it's like we have a contract with them. I believe this is the third year of the Cowhead. It's basically a type of, we basically don't pay anything. We don't pay anything. The buyers have kind of a sliding scale, but it starts at like 10%.
Premium, sure. On
when I issued the RFP, they were actually cheaper than anybody else we had respond, you know, to our RFP. So they're...
So move.
Second.
Wow. You don't want them to talk anymore, Gary?
It's receiving money, not spending.
That's right, too. That's right, too. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries. Thanks, Andy. Next up, Wendy.
Good morning. I'm coming to request to renew the contract for tax bill printing services with Applied Business Systems. I do plan to adjust the scope slightly to include other assessment printing and mailing services because we had them do the required second notice of the senior citizen exemption. So that's not really a tax bill printing. So I just broadening the scope a little bit. So that's in the wording.
The motion.
So moved. Second.
Questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, Rob.
Good morning. My first item, the professional services to install HP Elantra. That's more informational for you. You had approved up to $30,000 and it came in at $17,270. Next item, RFPs for two internet service providers. This is for the county office network. One is located in the county office building. The other one is located out at the public safety building. We received three responses. Empire came in at $1,000 a month, and this is for a 1 gig up and down connection. First Light came in at $1,000. Those are our two current providers. And we had another one from Granite Government Solutions, which came in at $1,094.56. I recommend that we use First Light and Empire as the cheapest two that are there. They're also our current providers.
Is there not the option to just use one provider? Why would we use both?
We need redundancy.
In case there's an issue with
several departments require it. Public health nursing is one of them that requires us to have a redundant connection.
Okay. I'll make the motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any more questions for Rob? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
All right. The third item is to renew our Service Plus contract. And this is for our county website. Original contract allowed for a 5% increase per year. The quote they gave me came in at 3.8%. So that's well within the contract. The cost is for this year will be $7,564.26.
Is that a multi-year contract, Rob?
No, it's year to year.
Year to year with the options to renew.
Yep.
Is there a motion?
To move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
Thank you.
Personnel, maybe.
Mr. Swackhammer, here's where we get to spending the money. So a few requests on today. Most of you heard about them last week, so I won't go into great detail, but certainly if you have any questions, please feel free to ask. First of all, in Public Works, we're asking to reclassify one currently filled automotive mechanic, CSEA grade I, to a landfill automotive mechanic supervisor, CSEA grade J. As we stated last week, there needs to be some supervision. It is a working supervisor, so they're going to continue doing the work as well.
Hello.
Second.
Questions?
With are we going to be backfilling on this or?
No, this is a reclassification. Okay, so this is changing the actual title of the position. Yeah.
Thank you.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
And next, we're asking to create one safety and training specialist, CSEA grade J. As I mentioned last week, this is going to not only, you know, ensure our compliance with PESH and OSHA and so on and so forth, go around and do spot checks, but also do our CDL training program, which we've put in the last few years.
Is this going to help us on safety equipment and so on, chainsaws and that type of thing?
I hope so. Yeah, I mean, this is a whole safety, you know, this is, they're going to be doing spot checks on people, watching stuff, going around, seeing how things are set up, seeing how flagging is set up, you know, checking policies, looking for new policies, new laws, stuff like that. So it's going to keep us really up to date on the PESH, the OSHA, all of that sort of stuff. Pretty much anything safety related, they'll be able to do.
Thank you.
So is there existing people, as I know we're creating a position, but is there already existing individuals doing that? Like what prompted an additional?
It was, I would say, a bit unorganized or disorganized, that we had a number, small number, few folks taking different parts of the training. And then especially with this expansion of the CDL program, we've been talking for about a year, especially with the CDL, as this was rolling out, that having someone do this, along with working with PERMA, our work comp insurance carrier, to have a focus on safety. Eric and Todd and crew have really been focusing on this, that having a staff person, a central staff person, where this is the majority of their work. They do have all the titles to be able to hop in a truck and, if things are slow, do other work. So we'll certainly keep them busy, but we wanted to consolidate all of those disparate functions into one.
So basically we didn't have an individual in this role at all, just individuals who are kind of picking up here and there.
Right.
Got it. Okay.
Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Any more questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
And Office for the Aging, asking to reclassify one Specialist Services for the Aging, CSEA Grade J, to a Senior Caseworker, CSEA Grade K. As I mentioned before, this situation where they need to supervise the caseworker, as well as do that sort of work, the title definitely fits. Duties definitely fit.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
And a request to create one principal clerk, CSEA grade H. This is the one that we're actually bringing over at a contract position back into county service.
Motion.
Motion the second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
And Social Services, asking to reclassify one Social Welfare Examiner, CSEA Grade F, to a Principal Social Welfare Examiner, CSEA Grade N. And Kathy went into much greater detail than I can last week. I think she's on the phone if you have any questions about this one.
Yeah, I'd just like to know what prompts such a large jump. You know, the max on the previous is now the minimum on this one.
Kathy, do you want to take this or you want me to do it?
Sure, I can speak to the request for reclassification. So we have had on average 7 to 8 vacancies in our temporary assistance unit. Some of that is a result of lack of training and consistent training. We also have increased caseloads. I mentioned at our presentation at the last meeting about we're serving like 250 homeless a night. We haven't had any administrative relief in those units as well. So this is going to serve two purposes. One, some administrative burdens that everything has to be signed and reviewed by a principal. But secondly, it's going to be someone who will be able to provide consistent training, and we hope that will help with staff retention.
And just to tag on, it would be a few grade difference, as you can see, or actually a number of grades, because the experience required, there's a few levels in between there. So you have your social welfare examiners, you have seniors, And then this principal would be above them. So it's the spread in grades based upon the amount of experience people need to hold this title.
I'll make the motion.
Your second?
I'll second it.
Questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
And in public health, asking to appoint a current employee to administrative officer, special children's services above the midpoint at management grade G, step 7, 67994. This is an employee that's obviously currently here. It's promotional. We have to come to you to appoint above midpoint in the grid. The experience is certainly there. And considering their current salary, that we feel this is the appropriate step to put them.
And for those who aren't aware, we're very much going to miss Diane Kiff, who is the retiring administrative officer. So this is appointing her incumbent.
So move.
Second.
Questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
Thank you much.
Nate. Jack.
Sure. A few things for you. So SHI International Social Media Archiving, Archive Social is the name of the company. SHI is the reseller of software, if you folks are familiar with those processes. Social media records that we create online or that people comment on our social media are actually records. State Education, which is where State Archives falls under, updated their guidance. Been doing this about 5 years, where those digital posts that we make and the comments to it are actually public records that can be foiled. So this provides us a seamless integration. I'm actually, Chris and I are the ones that manage it, just connects our social media accounts to a platform that retains that, so that should we get foils, and we've received a few, we can better easily produce them than try to figure a workaround. If Facebook changes something and those go away, technically we'd be in violation because we wouldn't have those records archived. The price for this for 2024 is $4,600. It is budgeted. That's about an 8% increase over last year.
I'll make the motion.
Second.
Is there any other services that we've looked into, or is this the only platform we've looked into?
We haven't put it out to RFP in a while because this is on state bid, but there are very few that I'm aware of. We did do an extensive search 4 or 5 years ago, but we do talk to other counties, and most other counties are kind of gravitating towards this because they, at least for this point in time, were kind of the largest player in the game.
Okay. How long do we have to keep those records?
7 years in most cases. Yeah.
How long?
7 years in most cases.
Various departments have been limited, but for this, it's 7.
7 years.
Anything else? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
Thank you. So the administrative code revisions, bring it back to you as you all tabled for additional review. In addition, Brenda was kind enough to send along the workplace violence prevention policy update, which just clarifies that if individuals carry weapons, or in the case of buildings and grounds, or, you know, they have box cutters, or public works has hammers and drills, that if it's a condition of your employment, specifically for peace and police officers, be it, firearms, tasers, those sort of things, that you're not in violation of the workplace violence policy by carrying those. Now, if you use them committing workplace violence, that would still be a violation. It doesn't give you open access to do that kind of stuff, but it just clarifies that policy. So presenting that for your discussion. In addition, I know there were some questions on the forward, for some brief update, and Brenda can certainly talk to it in more detail. But that was a result of a number of things. We wanted an introduction. We spoke with other counties and looked at what they utilize. And most importantly, in an arbitration for a discipline that we had this past spring in a CSEA main unit position. It was a public works employee. Their attorney challenged that there was no place in the administrative code that states these policies apply to all employees. They do by function, the fact that you adopted most of them by local law, the fact that the administrative code is codified in your charter, they do apply to all employees, but it made Jen's job in defending that arbitration much more difficult because she had called Brenda to testify that for the past 40 years, the administrative code has applied to all employees. And here's why. It just makes more sense to have that language spelled out up front. So with all of that, we'll entertain any questions that you have on the administrative code changes. The only additional change that were proposed based on what you have previously received is the changes to the workplace violence. The rest are as we proposed.
William?
I just have a question on the workplace violence. Policy objectives, item number two, it says that you have to submit a complaint, but it doesn't say to whom. I know you do further in the violence, but I just think it would be productive to have some names there or move the ones that are revised over here.
It says it under definitions 5.
And that's probably because it's a state model, so they probably left it blank. We can do that, though, if
no,
everybody agrees.
It's a form.
Yeah. It's a model policy, so that's why it's probably generic there.
Okay. My only other question is, this stated that it was effective of January 1 of 2011, so is this a revision?
It's a revision of your current policy.
So do we need to state that it's a revision?
No. All of these things technically would be, so, and when, in by function, when you, if you adopt this, and if this goes through, then Yvonne puts in their revised on.
Okay.
Kelly?
Regarding the code, the administrative code, I guess my question is, you know, what was submitted by the attorney Mitchell, how would we respond to that?
We have a memo that I circulated to you all, so the new legislators may not have it back in June or July from our outside counsel, from Romers, Wallens, Minow, and Gold, that clarifies that record and says the administrative code absolutely applies to all employees. Attorney Mitchell did not highlight the fact that you have adopted most of these policies by local law. It does not recognize the fact that we're an alternative form of government where you have a charter that codifies the presence of the administrative code. So we have a memo that essentially refutes most, if not all, of those points.
Okay. Thank you.
Kelly?
I was just curious if we know off the top of our heads which local law also contains that same information on the foreword, just so that if any one of us receives a question about that, that we could respond by it's already in the local law, so it's not something it's new. It's just icing on the cake.
It's a combination of law. Well, number one would be the charter, because the charter codified the administrative code. So number one, I would point to the charter. Number two, a lot of they were individually adopted as local laws. So your sexual harassment, workplace sexual harassment and discrimination policy was adopted by local law. Your corporate compliance was adopted. So they were adopted at different times.
So each of those local laws then contains that it applies to all of us, and it's similar wording.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's fine. I just wanted to make sure that we all understood that. I mean, that was really the main question, to understand why is it necessary.
Yeah.
And I appreciate everyone giving us the opportunity to hash this out a little bit more before we voted on it.
Make a motion to accept.
Workplace violence.
Workplace violence and then
separately, then the whole thing.
Yeah.
So we're going to first entertain a motion to adapt the proposed changes to the workplace violence prevention policy first, and then we could do the whole thing. So is that your motion?
Right.
Your second?
Second.
I have a question.
Scott?
Definitions, section 5, reporting. An employee who witnesses an incident or violence or threatening language or conduct must promptly report the incident to his or her supervisor or the risk manager. Why would it not be the HR person instead of the risk manager?
This policy actually encompasses not just workplace violence against employees, but it's also a safety component to it. So if there's an issue as far as building safety or anything like that, that all actually goes to the risk manager. And that's why it's there.
And that's historically been where the forms for those go by function. If we have, and it's not really workplace violence, more of it's been, well, I guess sometimes it is nothing that rises to the level of a serious threat or anything, but by function, personnel is copied in, law is copied in, we're copied in. But the primary goes to risk manager.
Okay. Examples of prohibitive activities on page 2, number 1, use, possession, or sale of any weapon. Shouldn't that be defined as while on county property or in act of your county? Because I possess weapons. A lot of people in this room possess weapons. But that doesn't mean we're violating this policy. I also sell weapons, but I don't do it here.
At the very beginning, it mentions on county property, county sponsored events, programs, activities that take place off county premise. So my view is that last sentence in the scope of the policy defines that it's on county property or at county events
or county functions
or county functions.
All right. So under weapons, under definitions to weapons, it doesn't include archery. The reason I'm asking these questions is this was always an issue at Corning. You couldn't have any sort of weapon in your vehicle, even if it was locked while you went into work. And a lot of people that hunt take their bow with them because when they leave work, they go off and hunt. I'm sure in our public works department, that happens a lot. So archery is enlisted under the definitions of weapons, but up in examples of prohibitive activities, storing of any weapons in a desk, locker, or vehicle, we could have people violating that.
So in definition.
I think that the definition of weapons is not exhausted.
Yeah.
The definition of weapons for like an assault, because you're looking at what would probably be something that would go to the penal law. There is a definition of weapons. In penal law. So you get into this knife, but not that knife that's all set for. So I think that's why they didn't do an exhaustive list of it. You know, you have one in state criminal law.
But Scott's concern, I think, is right in that if I hunt, I have my weapon stored in my locked vehicle because I go hunting after work. Our employees are certainly violating that because we have plenty of hunters in the area.
But the last part of that to both of you guys says, and any other implements.
Sure. It's not the definitions of the weapons so much as what Scott was bringing up, which was location of storage. If you store it in your vehicle.
Oh, yeah. No, I just meant as far as
what you're saying.
Yeah. Any other implement for infliction of bodily injury.
But I think you have
to. A crossbow is.
Right.
I think what the policy is that there's not a violent act. It in your car alone is not banned. It's the act of using it on county property or county function that triggers the workplace violence
and it's
policy.
Really, the building. I mean, we've had this conversation over the years that we know that people who hunt especially very likely have that in their vehicle, but it's parked out back here. Now it's a different story if they put it in their backpack and bring it in there.
Yeah. So what if we just say public vehicle then? Because then that, you know, if it's my private vehicle, I should be able to store a weapon. But maybe in like a public vehicle.
Because the example of prohibited activity, storing any weapon in a desk, locker, vehicle, or a lunchbox. If you're parked out here with one in your vehicle, but you don't use it, it's just locked in the vehicle. That still is a prohibitive activity.
We just put
county vehicle.
I think that's.
Yeah.
Would make it clear.
Yeah.
Anything else, Kyle?
Yeah, can you explain what is a threatening gesture? Because I've probably been blamed.
You've been guilty.
Against.
Yeah, I've just been blamed.
You want to come up here and we can
right,
use
right
you.
Right here, Scott. Right here, Scott.
That was good. Good.
So I'll make the motion with the amendment.
The modification.
The modification to the modification, I guess.
Okay. Got a second. Got a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That aspect carries now. Need a motion to approve the administrative code revisions.
So moved.
Do you? Because you already, it was tabled at the legislature meeting. So why would you have to approve it again here?
Technically, you wouldn't.
Okay.
As long as there weren't any changes to what was
presented. Yeah, other than the workplace violence. Yeah.
Okay. Then we'll pass on that.
Okay. Sorry, one additional item, informational, and Judy and Sue are here. I think you folks, if you have any questions, they can answer them. Certainly, we've been working very closely with them. They've been working with personnel, and we have as well in terms of DMV. We are at a difficult spot in staffing due to lack of eligible candidates, the going through the whole state process of waiting on the test, provisional employees. And, you know, Nate and Jen and their staff are certainly working as hard and diligently as they can to fill those. We also have some personnel issues that have people out of work. So we are at a point trying to get creative. Nate's working with the state. We're trying to get, that help program that we talked about. In terms of being more flexible for civil service testing, there are a number of things. Those motor vehicle clerks going to be looked at during the review, which is happening now, of the CSEA positions. But bodies aren't going to happen overnight. So it's going to require some adjustment and some flexibility. We're going to try to work with Judy and Sue as much as we can in terms of if we need to do a staggered closure in terms of, you know, these days Corning's open, these days Hornell's open. We will notify that as much as possible, trying to get as creative as we possibly can. But these titles in particular have been tough to fill.
I would like to see the larger sign brought to the offices so people don't have to get out of their cars. They can drive by and see that, like Hornell was closed Monday. We ought to have a sign out there saying we're closed.
We can talk to the Eclipse. We only have a couple of those signs. The Eclipse was taking most of those, but let me see if we can reallocate some of those.
So we can advertise what days that these offices are going to be open, especially if we go to 2 or 3 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question. I know Darlene had a job fair, and I don't know how successful that was.
No. I got zero from that job fair. I think that...
Can you go up and talk in the mic so they can hear you online?
Unfortunately, it was not very successful. I didn't get, we had about 13 people, I think, come through, and zero applied for any of the public health positions that I had open. I did partner with Tim and Brandon Rossetti on this job fair because they also had openings, and we were recruiting for kind of similar backgrounds. In terms of, you know, I need nurses, they needed, you know, paramedics and things like that. I think that they had an applicant, I believe, come out of that job fair. I don't know if it turned into employment or not, but I'm at a loss.
It's tough. It might not be, you know, we don't publicize a lot of these things, but certainly we work with personnel. We're attending way more job fairs than I think that we ever have. I just received an email this morning about another one. State DOL advertises those, sends and looks for partners. We've been sending. I've gone to some, Nate and Jen have gone to others. So we're trying to get it out there. We're spending money on Indeed where we never, it's a new world for everyone. We never used to have to spend money on advertising jobs. Now we are actually spending money to advertise jobs on Indeed and other platforms to try to get it. It's just, it's a difficult environment.
Thank you.
I just have one comment. I know Judy and those guys are doing everything they can do. The only other suggestion along with the sign is what I think maybe you might have the ladies in the office do or guys in the office, put a sign right on the door that says expect a 30 to 45 minute wait so that they're not beating up on the clerks when they get there. We don't want to lose any that we have. We all hate going to a restaurant. See, it says short staffed, half the dining room's open. But at least, you know, if we put a sign on the door that said expect a half an hour to 45 minute wait, short staff, at least they seen it at the door.
Right.
You know, we're letting them know before they get in there and stand. It's only a piece of paper on the door, but it's one more thing to try to make our staff that is there, like maybe not get yelled at as much with the counter. So.
Playing off of his comment, would it make sense to post a note on the door that says we're looking for applicants? You know,
you could definitely do it.
It's something to think about. And
so do we have any people in the works that are being trained that haven't been certified yet or waiting on? Or
we're working right now. We had a resignation, and because we're in this transition from provisional, because we were waiting on the test, they have to go through some mechanisms in state civil service, but...
So, you know, that's one thing that I think I'll piggyback off what Jack said earlier. You know, we have been attending a lot more job fairs, but job fairs are difficult with public service, mostly due to the civil service requirements, the testing. People, when they go to a job fair, they're looking to, you know, apply pretty quickly. That doesn't generally happen with us. But in this case, like Jack said, we're at a point where we're looking at provisional appointments, which for those of you who are new, those are appointments where we appoint somebody essentially temporary pending the test coming. The problem with provisional appointments is that they also, when that test does come, they do not only have to pass it, but they have to place in the top three people to keep that job. So if you have somebody who's already gainfully employed, they're not likely to jump ship to come for us, you know, to take that chance, right? So that's a difficult piece. The other piece, like Jack said, the salary study, we're looking at it to see, you know, where that needs to be. And he mentioned the HELP program. I've mentioned this to you folks a couple times. It's been greatly expanded by the state this year. And unfortunately, though, they have not given us a lot of guidance on it yet. But it's essentially a program that will allow us to forego the exam for certain titles. If those people spend a year in the position, they're actually grandfathered into the position as if they had taken the exam. I've had quite a few conversations with the president of the state commission, who we both kind of have a thought that this is probably going to be legally challenged, considering that in the state constitution, it says that you need to test these positions. So, but they are moving forward for it. It does require us, as Jack said, to receive approval from the state. It's not a quick process. It's similar to what we go through here when we're even doing these administrative code revisions or a local law. I have to hold public hearings. We have to allow people to comment. We have to do resolutions. And then it goes to the state and it goes through the state commission. It can take months. I've had them take years. I would imagine they'll get on this being that there's a big push, but I don't know how quickly. So we are exploring a host of options. As far as any in the works, we're always looking, but at this point, we're not necessarily training anybody or anything like that. We're still, looking for bodies.
Yeah, still looking, but it looks like because we have a list, mm-hmm. There's two positions that are able to be filled that mm-hmm. hopefully will be soon. Yeah.
I think one other, if you're putting notices up, I think one other thing you could do is put up a notice or put flyers outside the lobby that tell residents what they can do online. I realize Judy doesn't like that because we don't get as much fee as we do, but every annual registration I make on my trailers, I do it at home sitting with a cup of coffee, and I don't get frustrated standing in line behind people. So there's a lot of stuff you can do online,
mm-hmm.
Which if we're trying to provide services for the residents and we don't have people to keep offices open, that's another option for them.
And they, Judy has, yeah.
That's Scott.
Yeah.
Can you come up to the microphone? Because Hilda has to be able to hear you.
I would agree with that. As far as at this point, in January of this year, the retention rate all changed. So, I mean, that would be fine. And we have indicated to individuals that they can do that. The caveat to that is oftentimes we have people coming in to the offices. They've renewed online or tried to register online, have issues. They haven't received anything yet, or there's been an error in what they did receive. And then our clerks are winding up trying to correct everything. So it's a balance there. But I do believe that putting the signage up is really, really important, because let's face it, you go any place, if you can't read a sign, I don't care whether it's advertising for DMV or a political campaign, whatever, you want to be able to read it. So I get it. We do need, I think, larger signs. That would be beneficial. And as far as the signage with the weight, that's a good point. But if we do wind up, say, closing offices 2 days, you know, 1 2 days a week, 1 3 days a week, we would be able to staff the others with those employees, so that there would be more employees in the office. So hopefully the wait period would be less once everything got going. So
if you're gonna say the wait, you may also want to say because we're short staffed.
Right? Yes.
Just like you referenced the restaurant option. Because people don't understand that we can't get people to come to work here. So we're trying to do everything we can to service them with limited staff.
Right.
And it's not because of cost reductions.
No. And that's precisely what we advertised when the Hornell office was closed yesterday. It was due to staffing issues.
Right.
But
was advertised.
It was? Okay. Good. Because I think you can always get more and more word out there. But
mm-hmm.
I just wondered what positions do we have available that we can do without having to test?
In DMV?
Well, anywhere.
No, what ones?
So as far as something that would be appropriate to DMV, literally probably nothing.
But yeah. What ones countywide? We have a handful.
Legislators.
Fortunately,
thank God.
You have stuff like laborers, your truck drivers, your nurses, some nurses, stuff like that. It's generally something that requires a certification or a very little qualifications, labor general type of thing like that.
But the HELP program is meant to get people in the jobs without having to take that civil service test. That's yes. Kind of what
you're asking. Yes. So the first round last year was only for social services, and we got dispatchers actually as well, which was great, but that's pretty much it. So when I say greatly expanded this year, they greatly expanded because they had only done it for that. Actually, I don't think the dispatchers were intended at first. It was originally started out of a statewide group regarding casework, social services caseworkers. And then it kind of ballooned out a little bit. And now they've gone and seen that, well, maybe it works a little bit, so we should expand it out. But they're making us get approval for every title. So as far as anything we have available to use right now for anything like that, it's pretty much nothing. But we have social services, the caseworkers, and dispatchers.
Is it part of your plan or your goal to ask for more positions to be eligible for that?
Oh, yeah. We're already in process.
Which ones?
DMV clerks. To be quite frank with you, Kelly, off the top of my head, we've had so many titles flying around. DMV clerk's been at the top of the list. Okay. But
you can let us know.
Yeah, I mean,
it would be important for all of us to know.
Yeah, as we go through, and like I say, they haven't provided us great guidance on it yet, so we're still kind of in the preliminary. They passed this at the late February state commission meeting, so it's not too new or too old yet. So we expect more guidance as it goes. But, you know, as we put lists together, we can certainly tell you what titles we're going for. And we are going to do them in stages. We're going to try and do the most needed first and so on and so forth. And again, I don't know with all of the counties across the state applying at the same time, how long this is going to take us. They tend to not do a lot of them at each commission meeting. They kind of split them up, even if you've, you know, put them in, so they can take a while. I just don't want to, you know, it's not something we're going to have next month. I can say that.
Well, I think it's important for us to ask for the assistance. Mm-hmm. And then the other question I would have for you is, as far as a troubled position, say DMV clerk, where you're having a hard time keeping someone in there, how much inter-county transfer are we having between departments? Is there a similarity between a clerk position and their union title, where someone who gets in the door and gets trained could then switch to another department with less work but more money?
As far as a transfer, no. As far as taking another test, yes.
So they, even if they're in the DMV, they've taken the test and they are eligible, they would have to take another test to move to another job.
For that title, we've worked with Judy on some of the others that in her office, mm-hmm, that are in a different spot than motor vehicle clerk, where they could senior typist, mm-hmm, could, they're senior typist in many different departments. So that would be one where they could automatically interview if it's for the same title and go to a different, but for motor vehicle clerk, it would require them to be on a different list.
Should the pay scale be the same though, if it's the same title or similar?
If it's the same title, the pay scale would be the same, yes. But one of the things, the county clerk in particular, and a few other departments, and that's Burke, the new group who we contracted with, is reviewing that as well. There are some that are different titles technically, but similar qualifications that they're looking at, like, you know, so desk clerk for Judy, you know, that was graded similar to a senior typist. We worked on that. There are some of those one-offs, you know, that might only be, you know, 3, 4, 5 people out of this entire organization, but it has a meaningful impact because they could go to make the same money in a similar title, same qualifications, but maybe have a different, I don't want to say less workload, but a different stressors, different work environment, those sort of things. So we're looking at all of those things combined in the salary study.
And you also have situations, and we've gotten them down to very few, but there are situations where you have a one or two positions in the county, you know, very few, where a title is either very similar or maybe a lower level than another one. For instance, typist, the typist exam. So if you take the typist exam, you could also be appointed as a mail clerk, as a clerk. And there's various reasons that's been done over the years, mostly state suggested. But, you know, those positions are kind of dwindling a little bit. So the state, first of all, doesn't want to give a new test for them. Second of all, they're related enough, again, lower level, or what you would consider lower level in the qualifications and duties, that they can be, deem that most closely related list. And that's one of the situations you run into a little trouble with, you know, well, I can be a typist at this much, but a clerk is a grade lower, so I don't want that. You know, you do run into those little things too. And again, we've gotten a great majority of those gone, but there are still a few that hang on.
Sure. I just think that this is a really important thing that we should be focusing on. And if it is in your department goals, it should be, you know, very critical in reporting to us on a regular basis, so we know.
Sure.
Thank you.
I just have one more question. Could the DMV locations, do we know which one carries the biggest volume?
It's Bath right now.
It is Bath?
Yeah, Bath followed. Historically, it's been Bath followed by Corning, but followed by Hornell.
Of the time of year too. Horning is definitely up there. And bat did decrease a little bit over the, well, during COVID and all that, but
it's.
So bat is the biggest volume.
Well, no, I would say corning probably. The problem with say trying to determine what office, if we're going to be closing 2 days a week or 3 days a week, which one to select. You can say, all right, maybe corning does more, let's keep them open, close bath 2 days and Hornell 3 days. However, the 2 days that Hornell would be closed, then do people have to go to Corning to get their work? So the geographic location is what's got to come into play here as well. Because if Bath is more centralized than people from Greenwood or Lindley, you know, their offices were closed, they could come to Bath instead of going all the way to Hornell or going all the way from Greenwood to or West Union to Corning. So it's a matter of balancing. So if anyone has suggestions, I'm open to them, and just let me know.
Yeah, that was my suggestion when Judy and I talked last week, was if we're going to keep one office open every day, my opinion was Bath, because it's the most centrally located.
Yes.
That makes most sense.
It makes sense to me as well.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
One item for executive session, quick relative to litigation.
Need a motion to go into executive session.
I just have one more comment. Couple of months ago, when Wendy Jordan presented the assessor status report, and my concern is, although we're okay now, but we have 7 or 9 assessors covering 23 municipalities, and one assessor covers 6, one covers 4, and multiple ones cover 3 different municipalities. So my point is, I think we just need to keep that on our radar, because, you know, to me, that's a concern, because they struggle to find replacements when someone quits. That's my concern that we're right now.
It is a concern. And I think Jeff brought up earlier this month, code enforcement is also an issue that the towns are dealing with.
Code officer is a very big issue. Like, we've had the town of Bath just had a replacement. Town of Campbell, I've had 3 different ones in the last 8 months, and none of them are staying. And I actually don't know what you do. And it is something that I know nobody wants it to do, but it might be turned over to the county if we can't find somebody.
Plus, the code enforcement, number of them cover a number of municipalities.
That's right, so just like assessors.
It's the same as assessors.
Yep.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Isn't our county policy, once the town takes it over, we don't take it back? That's why we only have one town?
Code enforcement?
Code enforcement.
It's state law that the county has no involvement. Unless the town decides that they don't want to do it, they can pass a local law making the county take over for them, which you're thinking of Addison, which they did in the mid-90s. That's the one that the county's been responsible for.
So if the town has a code officer, can't fill it, all they have to do is pass a town law and dump it onto the county?
Mm-hmm. We get to charge them back. We charge them back for that. It's not a county expense necessarily. But
I just was wondering, I thought that if they once took it over, then they couldn't revert it back.
No, it can come back to us. And I agree with Jeff and Carol's point also on assessors is, you know, and we had a lot of meetings with assessors. We tried to hire an assessor to be able to contract, but it still seems like if we did, because we've talked to Wendy about that, you know, if it looks like we're at that point again, we can take a look, but we need to be in the conversations about code, because we don't want, we need to know if towns are talking about abandoning it. But we had a sidebar on Monday whenever it was last week.
Last week.
We had a sidebar about
you know, Jen's office, it's going to put a lot of requirements on the law department. It has ripple effects, and we need to be able to recruit. We need to be able to do those things. I could see us getting more and more into that business, but we have to, you know, it'll have to be, or in an ideal world, it'll be a collaborative effort with the municipalities to say, okay, we can take this on. And instead of right now, we contract with an individual to do Addison.
Yeah.
If we're looking to hire, we need to have a critical mass of, okay, just like we talked about with assessing, that if we had this many towns, okay, now it makes sense. Here are the other pressures that come in from law we need to add, you know, or this is the additional duties that her office is going to have. It's a complicated thing, but you know, we're open for the conversation because
yeah.
I agree, it's not going away. It's not like, it doesn't seem like a lot of people are lining up, just like we talked about with DMV, that a lot of people are lining up to take these tests, especially with codes and assessing, that have a lot of requirements.
Okay, so now I'll entertain a motion to go into executive session.
So
second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
We're in executive session.